Minister came to visit the Principality Stadium on quite a day. Welcome to the Welsh Rugby Union podcast. We'll hear about Wales Women's next challenge against England. Nigel Owens will give his verdict on a variety of subjects in the world of refereeing. We will start with the new First Minister of Wales visiting the Principality Stadium for the Wee Soda Inclusion Day, including plenty of school children from his constituency. Of course, it was a chance to ask some rugby-related questions, as well as his first impressions of the event.
Well, representation in every part of life really matters, and children themselves see that. So one of the schools here is a school that I was a school governor at when I was a school councillor as well. So at least three schools from my constituency, and that's why I agreed to come here a good time ago. But now I get to come here as First Minister, and the children and young people have noticed that too as well. So it's about seeing something and knowing that you can do it too. And that matters in sporting life just as it does in politics.
And you're an elevated role model now. You've been with these kids before, but now you're here as First Minister. Can you see the difference in how they feel about seeing you there in that position as First Minister?
Well, they're really excited. I'm not sure if that's because I'm here, because they're in the stadium and having an opportunity to run onto the same pitch as international players. But you want them to be excited about the future, to believe that they can do something. And that's so important for how we get to be an even better country in the future. And of course, I read the Billy Boston book to a group of children in St Mary the Virgin School. And the great thing is that within that school, there's someone who lives in the same address that Billy Boston himself grew up in. So you can see all those links back to people and say, this is who I am too, and I can be part of helping to make the future for the country, which I think is a really positive message for all of us.
Do you think events like this show the changing face of Welsh rugby?
I hope they do, because when you look at who we are as a country, not just the city of Cardiff, but across the whole country, we look different to 20 years ago, to 40 and 100 years ago. And I see that as a real positive. There are people that look like me through the history of Wales at different points in time, and we're very much part of the country's future. And you look at the people on this pitch, people recognise this is what Cardiff schools look like, and you want to see that reflected on the pitch as well. Now, I think back to when I was a child watching rugby, and Glenn Webb was unusual. Very standout in the team. You could not imagine a Welsh rugby team with the match day being an all-white team. That isn't because someone's made a political choice. It's a recognition of the talent that exists and wanting to see it thrive. That's where I want us to be, not just on the rugby pitch or the football pitch, but across the whole country.
25 out of maybe 1,300 players have been black who've played for Wales. Maybe that will change moving forward. Maybe this will inspire some events like this.
Oh, I think it'll continue to change. You know, think about our boy Mackenzie, who's got into the pitch recently as well. The fact that he's from Ely is what people often talk about, not the fact that he's not white. Yeah. And he's a big unit, loads of ability, and I hope people see him as a role model in exactly the way he saw Talupi Faletau as a role model when he was growing up as well. So having people that you think that you admire and you can emulate, I think really does make a difference. And look at his talent and his hard work, and that's why he's got to where he is.
So, it was certainly a celebration of the WRU's Jersey for All policy. Special for the WRU's new head of Equality, Diversity and Inclusion, Liam Scott.
I'll just start by explaining what's going on here today, because it's quite a spectacle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's great. We've essentially, you know, we opened the doors to the stadium as a celebration of all things inclusion within our community space, from diverse communities taking part in rugby and on the field for the first time, coming to the stadium for the first time in their lives, to our mixed ability groups and people with disabilities taking part, and our international game rugby fixture this afternoon with Cardiff Lions and Wrexham Rhinos. So actually, we know it's a stadium, it's a pitch, and it's a professional rugby pitch for our national squad, but actually, it's for everybody. It's Welsh rugby, and it's for everyone, including our stadium, because we are the people behind it, you know.
And just looking at the children who are here today, I mean, these are mainly from Cardiff schools, but pretty ethnically diverse schools.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And we've been working with schools such as St Mary the Virgin, which is just over the way. And it came about as a Billy Boston book by a brilliant author called Jessica Dunrod. And we're speaking to the school and speaking to some of the children, and they've never been to the stadium or never had a touch point within the stadium. It's surprising how many people live within the vicinity but don't necessarily see a connection or want to come through the doors. So for us, it's about creating those opportunities and opening the doors and saying to people, coming in, it's a great experience, get involved in the game, and it is a game for everybody, whether that's on the field or off the field.
and having been here and having seen the stadium, they're more likely to want to come back and to get involved, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see it as we're in the opportunities business. We want to give everyone a positive experience and opportunity. And the aim is that we build lifelong participants and spectators that feel a connection and an emotive connection to the national sport of Wales.
Let's get on to you and your role, a new role as head of EDI at the Welsh Rugby Union. Just explain what that involves and what the job entails.
Yeah, so it's a relatively new role as a head. We've previously had a national lead within EDI who's built some great foundations for us as an organisation and built an initial strategy. So within my role now, we're going to look at the new strategy in line with the WIU strategy that's due to be launched in the summer and aligning that and ensuring that inclusion is a golden thread through everything that we do as a business and as an NGB. So we've got EDI network, and we've aligned the EDI, the rugby inclusion officers under the EDI banner and department. So working with our regional foundations as well, it's just trying to get our fingers out and get our impact across the breadth of Wales, but also then from a strategy perspective, it's just ensuring that no matter what it is, from stadium operations to ticketing to performance to community, we've got inclusion at the forefront of everything we do, because we have to represent the change in society of Wales.
And this is a part of it, obviously, but this is only a small part of it. Kids like this, part of that job.
Absolutely. It's almost like an end product, an exciting time for children. It's a once-in-a-lifetime moment for the participants and for us as an organisation. But actually, how do we make it sustainable in the long term into the future? So actually, longer term, we don't have to run events like this, because this is happening every week. And everybody is engaged with the game and everybody is connected to Welsh rugby.
Now, you're someone who's been involved in Welsh rugby a long time. But just give people an idea of your background and how come you're in this position.
Yeah, so a number of things really. I've been working in community rugby development pretty much since 2005. I've worked for the regions, I've worked for the Welsh Rugby Union, for a variety of guises. Passion of mine has always been inclusion. I was fortunate to have a lot of opportunities within rugby, not necessarily on the field, but I had great inspiration from my grandfather who got me engaged in the game and I fell in love with it. But that was the opportunity created by my grandfather. We've got to ensure that we create opportunities for everybody and remove any potential barriers within that. So that's my passion, and that's what I want to do, and I want everybody to enjoy the great game that is rugby. That's probably given me some of the highlights of my life, watching as a spectator or even within my work professional life, just loving every second of Welsh rugby.
And you invited the First Minister here. He comes as the first black leader of any European country. He talks about Billy Boston and Glenn Webb and Mackenzie Martin. How important are those role models in terms of the work you're doing here?
It's huge, because essentially you're almost, and you use the term trailblazers, but there are trailblazers, because now there is a path, it is a route, but it's a visible path and there's a visible route. So whether you're a 7-year-old child taking part in rugby here for your first time, or some of our older groups this afternoon coming in, knowing that what can be achieved and seeing somebody already achieve it, somebody that represents you, somebody that may look like you, is huge. And I think as long as we've got those goals, people will be able to achieve it. And it's our job to make sure that we remove any barriers for people to progress.
There are people who think EDI is a waste of money. It's hard to look around and agree with them, but what would you say?
Yeah, I think it's a naive outlook. I think it's important that society is changing as a whole, both within Wales, within the UK, within Europe, within the world. And we've got to ensure that as an organisation, we are at the forefront of that change and we are representative of that, and we've got to be open-minded to that. 5 years ago, people hadn't heard of Zoom. Society and things change that, and that's why we've got to be open-minded and we've got to have a growth mindset to ensure that we stay ahead of any societal changes we move through.
You're listening to the Welsh Rugby Union podcast. And it was certainly quite an occasion. The following day, there was a crowd of 6,000 for the Wales women's game against Scotland. A good game it was too, plenty of entertainment. The result didn't go quite Wales's way. A last-minute conversion drifting agonisingly wide for a two-point defeat. Afterwards, Captain Hannah Jones and Coach Ewan Cunningham reflected and started looking forward to England next.
No, we probably didn't come out to the blocks as well as we hoped we would have, and credit to Scotland, they were good and took their opportunities well in that first half. But I felt we showed great character to come back in the second half just to go in with 4 points down, so that was good from our point of view. But then it's the small things that we've got to fix up for this week. Capitalising on after scoring and exiting well and not putting the pressure back on us, really.
England's up next at Bristol, no doubt in front of a big crowd. What sort of areas of improvements in your performance do you think you'd be looking for?
The accuracy is definitely something we look on, and obviously coming away with points is key. But, you know, you're going up against England. I think just give your all now. There's no worries about that.
It's hard to take a loss, especially at home. But I thought we showed a lot of character, and there's some good bits in that game we can take forward into next week. We've got to learn quickly, just take the lessons from this game and get excited for a brilliant challenge in front of 15,000 potentially, which is a great arena to play in, and another challenge for us as a team.
So now we'll hear at length from former World Cup final referee Nigel Owens with his thoughts on the state of the game, the laws he would change, and explaining some of the laws as they stand, starting with the use of television match officials.
The game has changed. You can't referee a professional game of rugby, particularly at the right at the top end of the game today, without technology to help you make the decisions that are just humanly impossible for you to see. But after saying that, I think the more you use technology, the more discussions we are having, because then rugby is a game of a lot of grey. Rugby is not black and white in many areas, just like life is. And then once you bring it into technology, it then becomes very technical to the letter of the law, and then the feel of the referee, his interpretation of it, then his hands get tied a bit. And this is something that I've been hanging the drum about for quite a few years, is we are talking about more controversies now with technology than we were before we had it the way that it is now. So from a personal point of view, I certainly think it is beneficial for the game. But I also do think that if you use it too much, then it does take away from the game. And it also then, I think, subconsciously takes away from the referee, because my philosophy when I refereed was, I know that I'm not going to get everything on the field, but I'm going to do my damn best to get everything I can. And then what was just humanly possible for me or my assistant referees to see, then that's when you want the team order to come in and sweep behind you. But if you go out there knowing that is there as a backup, that's when you make mistakes. So it's a little bit like, put a tightrope across the two highest skyscrapers in the city. Now, if you're going to walk across that tightrope and there's no safety net underneath, you're going to make damn sure that you're going to be totally focused and get to the other side without making a mistake and falling off. Mistakes will happen once in every 100, but they'll be very, very far and few between. Now, put a safety net underneath it, and you're going to go walking across that knowing, doesn't matter if I fall, I'm going to be safe. So you're going to walk across, maybe not as focused as you would be, a little bit blasé, and then all of a sudden the mistake happens and you fall. And that's what I think technology has done. So from a personal point of view, it is needed in the game, because that's what we want, is to get the big decisions right. But I do think it needs to be reduced and not used in the way that it is at the moment, which is pretty much for nearly everything, and let it go back to the match referees, who are more than capable of making the decisions on the field themselves.
One thing, Nigel, with a lot of former referees now working with clubs or unions, just if you could maybe point out from your perspective the benefits of that possibly for the sport, for the teams, and for refereeing as a whole.
Thanks. Yeah, look, I think anything that's going to benefit the spectacle and benefit the game, you know, is something that we should all welcome as part of the game. It's a trend. It's been happening for quite a few years. I used to go in with Wales pretty much during their international campaigns, particularly the Six Nations, referee the contact sessions, help them understand what is, you know, what is a penalty, what isn't, try to get them more disciplined. Penalties are hugely important in a game, not just the ones that you kick for 3 points, but maybe the one that you silly give away in the opposition 22 and all of a sudden you're back in your own 22. So penalties are huge in a game, particularly if they're high. So it's something that benefits the game. Also part of that role, you would be advising the management and the captain in particular and the team of all different referees have a different way of dealing with situations, of strong points or things maybe they're not so fussy on in the game. And then part of that would be helping them not to get away with things in the game or to cheat in the game, but to say, look, you know, with this referee, for example, as long as you're sort of on the offside line, he's happy enough as long as you're not in front of it. As long as you're on it, you could be quite tight, then he's happy with that. The referee you may get next week with a different referee, he's much more strict. He wants you clearly behind it. So if you're not clearly behind, you may well get pinged. So just little things like that. And then you help the team prepare. And I think the relationship as well, which was probably highlighted over the last couple of years between coaches and World Rugby and referees, is hugely, hugely important. The feedback needs to be open and transparent. Yes, coaches need to abide by a code of conduct, but also as referees, we have to hold our hand up and say, well, look, yeah, you know, that wasn't the performance that I usually give, or yeah, I got that wrong. That also helps that relationship as well, I think, between and coaches and captains and referees as well, which I think will benefit the game as well. So I think it is an important part, is a step forward in rugby, I think, in getting those relationships. Because, you know, you do get frustrated. You know, the players will have made a mistake in the game. But if the referee makes a mistake in the last minutes, that's what everybody is talking about, whether we like it or not, and that will probably never change. So sometimes as a coach, you are going to get frustrated. As a player, you are going to get frustrated. So it's key then that, you know, we have this relationship. You know, I was just speaking to Rob Owley yesterday, who wanted me to look at a couple of things from the game where they'd have my view to see if they're on the same page. Because when they feed back to World Rugby, they won't send something back where I'm going, oh, look, Rob, the referee is right here, or look, this is a 50-50, you know, another referee may penalise it, another referee won't. So, you know, there's not much point in you really sort of sending this back. You just want to send back where you clearly want an answer, because it's not what you were expecting from that decision. So it is, I think, it is an important role, and a role I'm sure that will benefit the team, will benefit refereeing as well, but also will benefit the game as a spectacle, I think.
The hooker must have his feet outside.
Outside. Yes.
Now you have a touch judge standing there saying, let's get the line up there. Why do you not get hookers? It's a simple thing to do. Second one is kicks to the corner. Everybody knows that a 5 meter line out is the most important thing. Why do you turn your back on a player taking a penalty kick? You make the mark, you walk away, it takes 7 meters. If life is all about getting to the corner, so is it time for referees to carry, as in football, a spray? And as the law says, you must kick from behind the mark. And if you don't, you have to take it again. So can you then stop the most ridiculous thing of all, where referees try to make a mark for a scrum on an artificial pitch?
It's been highlighted now. And again, the power of social media, the good and bad of it, is things like this will be highlighted. And then it becomes a talking point. And then what will you see tends to happen then? There'll be a directive then. The referees will be told, look, you need to get those players behind the line, and then that will be addressed. I do tend to agree with you. I think it's a little bit, not the most important thing on the referee's checklist, but I think it's a simple thing to get right. So, yeah I do. It is a simple thing to put right, and I agree with you on the penalties. I actually did call a couple of us at ask back to take it again. You know, if it's a couple of metres, it shouldn't be a problem. But if you are taking 6, 7, 8 metres, then yeah. And what I think you will see, you're highlighting it here now, and other people highlight it as well. And then there will be sort of a directive then to the referees. Look, this bit of housekeeping is simple enough to do. Let's tidy it up, particularly for the assistant referees. So a little bit of common sense, I think. If there's half a foot or 1 foot slightly going into the field of play, it shouldn't be a problem.
Nigel, just to follow up on what you said earlier, taking away the safety net and too much technology coming in. We now see this move towards the 20-minute red card and the bunker system and everything. Is that creating more complexity to the game that makes it more complicated for the referees, given there's all these extras around?
I think it does. What's important, I think, in rugby or in refereeing or in anything you do, whether in any walks of life, is that you don't sort of go halfway to try and fix something just to get something for the sake of getting an answer to something you want to get the answer for. And what I mean by that is, what I think we need to look at, and this is a personal view, is we need to sit down and really look at exactly what is a red card. We have to look at if something is complete accidental or even careless, but you know, there was no recklessness in it. It wasn't an act of thuggery. You weren't charging in with a head or shoulder, not caring where you hit somebody. If it was an act of sort of, you're sitting there and going, oh, us unlucky, then we need to look at, well, why are we giving a red card for something that is unlucky and there was no recklessness in it? So we need to differentiate, I think, first of all, between exactly what warrants a clear red card. And for me, if you go flying into a ruck with your shoulder first, your arms behind you, straight into the head of a player, which is complete act of recklessness and dangerous, then for me, that you should be sent off, but then you shouldn't be replaced in 20 minutes. So they need to look at exactly how this all works. And that's where I think at the moment we sort of step between a rock and a hard place at the moment of trying to paper over. We don't want to spoil the game. Somebody sent off unluckily for 60 minutes, they're down to 40 men. Well, my question would be, well, if somebody's very, very unlucky, then why is he given a red card? So we need to look at exactly what constitutes a red card, I think. We also have to remember player safety is hugely, hugely paramount, and particularly here in the USC as well as any other competition in world rugby and any other one as well. And we have to sort of change player behaviour. We have to get them out of that sort of recklessness, you know, flying in, not caring where they're hitting people. We have to change that. What is evident is, are we actually changing that player behaviour? And then I'm a little bit specs. I can understand the need for the 20 minutes when somebody is unlucky, but as I said, that's something that needs to be addressed, whether it should be a red card or not, or should it be a different sanction for a different red card? Who knows? But I also am a little bit sort of worried that if you're just going to lose, you're just going to be down to 14 men for 20 minutes, are we then taking away what we really need to be strong on, and that is changing player behaviour and making the game as safe as we possibly can? If you look back at the tip tackle many years ago, or contact in the air, referees went really, really strong. They were really strong. Players were sent off. We very rarely see a tip tackle anymore. Very, very rare we see them. And very, very rare do we see now the recklessness of taking a player out in the air. Yes, it happens sometimes, but not as it was before, because referees went strong. There was a ban for it and it changed player behavior. But for some reason, we are still struggling with getting the change of player behavior when it comes to recklessness around clear outs and around head contact, in getting those tackles lower. You see some players, some teams are consciously trying to do that. Sometimes others are not. And this is where it's important, you know, people like Jaco, Jerome Gassez in France, the roles that they will have in the Springboks camp in making sure, one, player safety, and also for the benefit of the team as well, we do not want to go down to 14 to 30 men for any period of time in the game. So let's make sure we get the discipline right. Let's work hard and let's get these tackles lower. And that's when the benefit of having a referee in then as well in changing that player behaviour. So I'm not emotionally attached for or against the 20 minutes red card, but I just think at the moment it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction in trying to find a balance in keeping people happy when people are going, oh, I've spoiled the game, they're down to 14 men, compared to a clear red card, which is there for a reason. I think there needs to be a little more time spent about this, and let's look at the whole picture and make sure we get it right, rather than just something papering over the cracks and we don't see a change in player behaviour, particularly when it comes to head contact, you know, which player safety is paramount.
Listened to an interview with an Irish referee recently who spoke about the connection with his foot judges or TMO. You would have had the likes of Derek Bevan do TMO in a lot of your games. How important is it for a referee to have that relationship with his touch judges or TMOs, especially in big games?
Yeah, look, it's hugely important because, you know, first of all, you need the team of four working together to have that trust, knowing how everybody works, knowing what the referee wants as well from them, the way that the referee interprets different things as well, because, you know, what may be a penalty for the assistant referee or what may be a yellow card for the assistant referee may not be necessary for the referee. So you need that sort of working relationship of trust and understanding each other as well. You tend to find that during World Cup tournaments where people work together for a period of time, that team of four in particular tends to work much better because they are working together quite often. They know the sort of the ins and outs of each other. It's also important as well that you have the capability on the field with you as well, being able to make those big decisions. And obviously neutrality plays a hugely important part in appointments and stuff as well. So yeah, look, the team of four, you can't referee an international match or any professional match on your own anymore. You can't. You need a good team around you, particularly two assistant referees and the TMO as well. It is important, I think. Very, very important.
If you could make one law change to improve the game or to improve the referee's ability to referee the game, what would that be?
For me, I certainly look at substitutions, the way they're used and how many you can have. If the two teams put on all the subs, you've got 60 new players on the field in the last 20 minutes playing against 14 players who've been on for 60 minutes. I think that will help the safety of the game because if players are conditioned to play just 40, 50 minutes, then they're able to carry much more weight. The collisions are much bigger. So it reduces the impact and the collisions, I think. Also as well, I think it'll help open up the game as well, particularly the second half or where the game becomes nothing worse as a referee is a great game of rugby going on and then you have to stop, sub on, another stoppage, sub on. That is certainly one that I would look at. But the one for me that I would like to change pretty much now is the goal line dropout. Yeah. I don't think that has worked. It has probably given the advantage to the defence and rugby has always been the benefit out to the attack. It was bought in for two main reasons. It was bought in to try and sort of get away from the constant kicks to the touchline for a 5-meter line out, which made teams then maul over, which is pretty much impossible to defend. And then when they were held up, it would be a drop goal and drop out. So that then hopefully was going to encourage teams, okay, they're not going to kick to the corner so much to set up a maul. They'll off the top of the line out and they'll spread it wide. I don't think that has happened. Pretty much every line out that goes to the corner is going to be a maul setup still. So it hasn't done that. The other reason was, from an attractive point of view, but also a safety point of view, was to try and reduce the amount of pick and goes when you're sort of within 3, 4, 5 meters of the try line. So instead of people picking and going, and just constant contact and impact, physically barging yourself over, it reduced those contacts, it reduced those impacts, help improve player safety because you've got less impact. I'm not seeing that. Certainly not seeing a visible change in that. I'm still seeing when people get within a couple of meters of the try line, I'm still seeing pick and goes when there's plenty of numbers out. It hasn't. I don't think it's done that. So the two main reasons it's brought it in was, I don't think it's worked.
Yeah.
I think if you make a brilliant attack, we saw it in the Wales game on the weekend where the Italian defender literally picked the Welsh ball and tackled up. Him over the line, trying to keep him on top of himself in order to get a goal line dropout. That is a negative ploy in the game. So for me, that is one law. I just don't see any benefit of it. I think it's taken away from the game. Now, one thing we don't want is endless scrum after scrum, scrum after scrum, scrum after scrum. But what we must never lose from the game is the ability to have a scrummage, which is a hugely important part of the game. Remember that rugby is a game for all shapes and sizes. And if you lose the scrum as an integral part of the game, not the most important part of the game, but an integral part of the game, then you're going to lose a huge amount of players who have no place to play in the game. So sometimes we need to reward a side who's been positive and attacking and reward them with a scrum five in order they can continue that attack. I would change it tomorrow if I could, but I can't do that.
Interesting. I wonder if anyone from World Rugby was listening. Plenty more to report on next week, of course. But until then, from the Welsh Rugby Union podcast, goodbye.